everybody. This is John with Out of Character. Today's podcast is not an actual Plague podcast. It's more of a discussion, and it's a bit different than things that we've done in the past. Rather than reviewing a single role-playing game or a single topic about role-playing games, I wanted to kind of talk about more like a genre of RPGs, which in this case is the superhero role-playing game. This is also probably going to be more beneficial to people who are just starting out with gaming, and it's kind of trying to figure out what games they might want to be interested in playing. You might also find this useful if you haven't really delved into superhero games. I've played a lot of superhero role-playing games because growing up as a kid, I really enjoyed like a lot of different comics, and I would say, other than the first role-playing game I ever played was Dungeons & Dragons, which I think most people that's probably true, because it's just the most accessible one. The first game I ever ran was Mutants and Masterminds, second edition. And over the years, I've picked up various versions of different role-playing games. It's like you have fantasy games, and then you have, which are, you know, there's a ton of fantasy role-playing games. It's probably the most... There's so many books for fantasy games that are out there, it's really hard to discern which ones you really want to try, and I think a lot of people who like to try a bunch of different ones, you find you just have all these books. I would say superhero games are in a similar category. There's a ton of them. Not as many as fantasy games, but still quite a bit. So I sat down and just looked at the ones that I had, and I wanted to share some of my thoughts and opinions on them, and, you know, hopefully they'll help people figure out what might be a good fit for their game and their campaign. A lot of the games I'm going to be talking about, I've done full reviews for or full discussions of on earlier episodes of the podcast. This is not going to be an in-depth review of each of these games because that would take hours, and I want to keep this as succinct as I can. I'll try to hit the high points and share a little bit about each of these games, but if you're looking for something really in-depth and detailed, I'll point out if we've done a full episode for them, and I'll try to give a bit more attention to the ones that we haven't. So, the first one I want to talk about is the first thing you really have to look at when you're doing a superhero role-playing game is what kind of game you want to play with. That's going to determine a lot of what system is going to work best for your game. Do you want to do something with like an established setting, an established world that already exists independently of your game, like DC Comics, Marvel Comics, Vertigo, Valiant, any of the, you know, there's so many independent comics like Atomic Robo, virtually any kind of, you know, this is the world and that's what it is and we're playing within that world, whether we're playing original characters or, you know, characters in that world. That's going to go a long way towards helping you figure out what systems work best. Some systems work really well with letting you create your own heroes that are unique and original, and some don't as well. So we're going to kind of, after you've looked at that, let's say for the purposes of this, you've chosen to play an established world, like with DC or Marvel, because it makes it easier for me. There are a fair number of games that do give you all the tools to run a game in any of those various settings. Now, I'm only going to be talking about games I've actually played, so if I don't bring up your favorite game and you're like, this is a Marvel or a DC game that I really like, I apologize. I'm not saying anything bad about it, I just haven't played it in that instance. I literally got out every superhero RPG book I have and went through all of them for the past 3 days to record this. So one thing that I've picked up, and I've known about it for years, but I only recently got all the books for it, is DC Adventures. So DC Adventures is Mutants and Masterminds reskinned for the world of DC Comics. For people who aren't familiar, that's like Justice League, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Young Justice, all those sorts of characters. That's DC Comics. It has a lot going for it because Mutants and Masterminds is a fantastic system. This is just Mutants and Mastermind, like, kind of focused on one particular thing. There's kind of like a decently high point of entry for the game. The core book itself that gives you everything you need to play is, you know, it's a hardcover book. It's a licensed property book. There are some source books that give you like there's the core player book that gives you all the mechanics and rules and how to do everything. There's source books, which are really cool and they are worth the investment. If you want to get the PDFs, I picked up the PDF versions because they did a sale over the holidays. I think they were like $5 each for the PDF versions of these source books. One is like, they have two volumes that are almost every character you can think of from DC Comics. The good guys and the bad guys. And yes, if you go through and flip through, you will find a few that are missing. I know, believe me, but most of the characters you would think to find that people are going to be like, oh, where's this character, are in there. And even some really weird ones that you might not have heard of. There's also a universe book that explains kind of like, you know, what's the Green Lantern Corps, what's New Krypton, what's this, that, what's the Phantom Zone. It basically just kind of establishes what the universe and the various alien races and things that come to play in the DC Comics universe are. All those books together, if you're buying hard copies, you're spending over $100. If you're buying PDFs and sticking to that, I'd say you're still probably going to hit close to $100. Having said all that, if you have the money and you're wanting to do DC Comics, it's, you know, you can get the core book and maybe, you know, GMs will probably want to buy one of the source books. If you are doing a DC Comics game, it's fantastic for that. If you just want to play a different version of the Justice League, or you want to play, you know, the goth, you know, the Birds of Prey, or, you know, all the CW shows that do, like, if you want to do, like, a version of The Arrow, or Legends of Tomorrow, or any of that stuff, hands down, this is my go-to system for DC games. It's the best. With the source books and everything, it has a clear detail on how to make those characters, what those characters are like. It's really great for one-shots, especially, because, like, if you want to do something like Justice League Unlimited kind of thing, just have, like, a weekly pickup game with whoever shows up, you can just use the... I mean, if you don't, you know, if you're not worried about the power ratings so much, which I don't really care about that in Mutants and Masterminds, I think that it works pretty well for itself. Just have people be like, hey, pick, you know, five or six heroes, and... you know, whoever we show up with given week will do the episode, and that'll be the game. So you can kind of have a rotating hero session going on. You're not, like, always going to play Superman or always going to play Aquaman or Huntress or Vibe, whoever you want to be. So it is really good for DC games and for one-shot games even. I think it really does shine there, because you have this huge number of characters to play with. It's still available. It's not something that you have to go hunting for to find it. Green Ronin is the producer behind this. You know, it's available as PDF. It's available. You can usually find the books. And if they aren't in your local game store, they can probably order it for you still. I would say try to grab the core book. I don't think there's any new material on the horizon for this, as far as I'm aware. I don't think there's going to be any more material for this anytime soon. It is what it is at this point. I think they did what they needed to do to get it out there. If they do more stuff, great. I will say the game does have one big weakness. That is, it's not that great for your original characters. If you're wanting to play heroes of your own imagination, this may not be the book for you. Now, I do want to say one thing. One of the great things I love about DC is you have the multiverse. And there's all these different worlds with, you know, different versions of people inhabiting each of them. You have, like, the world where you have the crime syndicate. You have worlds where, like, you know, the Metal Men are the Justice League. Different universes where... you know, the Kingdom Come universe. So if you want to make up your own DC universe with familiar elements, but switch things around, you know, that works. I think that if you want to be like, I'm playing a character that's completely new to the DC universe, has no ties to anything here, and is just a freestanding structure, I've seen people do it. Usually it doesn't work. Usually it stands out like a sore thumb. It's just not what this thing shines for. There's a lot of cool things you can do with it, but that isn't one of them. You know, if it works in your game, great. My advice, if you want to do your own original heroes, there are systems that are better than DC Adventures to do it with. So DC Adventures is fantastic for DC heroes, and that's really what it shines for. It's a really good starting point if you're new to games, because you have that familiarity. If you and your friends are all comic book fans and you're all into DC Comics, you're not having to explain the universe and do a lot of world building. You can jump right in and be like, okay, we're doing a game where everybody is part of the Justice League. You don't have to worry about even character creation so much, because if you did buy any of those source books, you can be like, okay, everybody pick a character, and we can tweak them a little bit based on the power level, or just ignore the power level and jump right in. Again, fantastic for one-shots, even an ongoing game, because if you're swapping characters in and out, you can be like, okay, we're doing these characters this week, and next week that character, you know, kind of like the thing I liked about the old Justice League cartoon that was on in, like, the one with the WB version, you had, like, okay, this week Hawkgirl, The Flash, and Batman will solve a case, and then next week it'll be different characters, and, you know, but you had returning members, but they weren't all there all the time. Sometimes the Justice League is, like, every member of the Justice League is involved in every case in the comics, and that gets annoying. But yeah, DC Adventures is a good point of entry game, good game if you have a little bit of money to spend, if you like DC Comics. Probably not the best option if you're looking to do original heroes, though. Having said that, let's talk about another established universe setting game. This is going to be the Marvel Heroic role-playing game. So, the Marvel Heroic role-playing game, it got a lot of mixed reviews, but I really personally, I like it. I think it's an awesome game. It does have strengths and weaknesses, obviously. So, one of the things that I loved about this game was the core book is $20. And it had everything in it that you needed to jump in and start playing immediately. That includes characters, an adventure, bad guys, a synopsis of the rules. It does use the Cortex system. For people who aren't familiar with that, that's what powers most of the Margaret Weis production games. I will say that was just an awesome thing because, like, when I say it had everything you need to really jump in and get started here, in the core book, which I have the core book with me, I'm just flipping through here real quick. You're obviously playing in the Marvel Universe, which, you know, everything I said about the DC Adventures game is more or less going to be true here. If you want to jump right in and play a game where everybody knows the characters and you're not having to explain everything. I loved the choice of heroes because they have data files. These are basically your character sheets, and it comes with a decent number of them to start the game. You have new characters like Armor, who was a member of the X-Men, Beast, Black Panther, Black Widow, Captain America, Colossus, Cyclops, Daredevil, Emma Frost, Human Torch, the Invisible Woman, Iron Fist, Iron Man, Luke Cage, Mr. Fantastic, Ms. Marvel, Sentry, Shadow Cat, Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Storm, The Thing, and Wolverine. Those are the characters that are in the core book. So any one of those characters you can take out and start playing in the game immediately. You don't have to make anything, you don't have to swap anything, you're off to the races, playing the game, and getting started. I feel like that's a really good array of heroes. Now, the game is a few years old at this point, so some of those characters have changed. Ms. Marvel is now Captain Marvel. Just as one example of, changes that have occurred. So if you wanted to, change the names. I've played that a lot. I've played that as a play-by-post game. We've played it a few times on the podcast. And I really do like it. So there's a few things that are really unique to that game. One thing that's different about it is it uses a dice pool system. What does that mean? It means, unlike DC Adventures, where you're rolling a d20 for pretty much all your rolls, the Marvel role-playing game uses different dice, and you're basically building a pool to accomplish different things. Like, for example, let's say Black Widow is in Latveria, and she's been dropped there to try and prevent an assassination attempt on Doctor Doom. Okay, so you have various stats in this game. You have your affiliations, which are exactly what they sound like for more purposes of this. It's how your character's used to working. They come in solo, so is your character someone who's kind of off doing things by themselves more often than not? Buddy, which is, like Captain America and Bucky, or Misty Knight and Luke Cage. And then team, which is the Avengers, the X-Men. Is your character used to having that full support? Now, in the case of Black Widow, she has a D10 for her solo. That's her highest die. Everything else, Buddy is a D8, Team is a D6. So she's used to working alone. So let's say she's trying to sneak past these guards on the Latverian border, outside of where she was dropped, to get into this place. Okay, so she's solo, so I would say, okay, I'm using my D10. You have what's called distinctions. Distinctions are really unique because there are three traits about your character. It kind of goes back to unique things about your character that define who they are. You could also say they're similar to fate in a way, but we'll talk about that later. So in the case of Black Widow that's in the book, you have Dangerous Liaisons, Natural Leader, and Russian Super Spy. So in an instance where that would be one of those traits would be a hindrance or work against your character, you would roll a d4. It doesn't add as much to your roll, but you get a power point, and power points can be used for a whole bunch of different things. Or you can just say, okay, I'm trying to sneak past these guys. A D8 is perfect. Super Spy totally applies. I'm going to do that. Then you have your power sets. Now, power sets are your superpowers, essentially. She has Red Room Conditioning and Widow Sting Electric Bracelets. You can only really apply one thing from each of your power sets to a roll. So for the purposes of this, I'm going to say her enhanced reflexes allow her to, you know, move more quickly and get around a little faster. So we'll add a D8. And she has, you have electrical blasts from her bracelets and swing line. So we're going to say, okay, swing line totally works. I'm going to try to swing up into the trees, go over the fencing, and slip past these guys. So we'll add a D8 to that as well. Let's see. Then you have your specialties. These are more skills that your character excels at. She's got like acrobatics master, covert master, vehicle expert, combat expert, and menacing expert. So she's got a lot of skills. We're going to go with covert master, because it's a D10. You would assemble those dice into a pool and roll, and that's basically the dice pool system. Now, I don't have anything against the dice pool system. If you like that system, I think it works really well. Here's the problem. Dice pool systems as a whole, I think that players tend to focus, it can draw the players in and out of your game, because they're going to be trying to figure out how to apply things to your game. I don't know why, that just seems to be what happens. Now, that may not be true of every group, that may not be true of every player, but it is something to keep in mind. If you want to do a deep, heavy role-playing Marvel game, and your players are struggling with the dice pool, it's something to think about and be like, okay, I don't know if that's going to work, I feel like it's simple enough in this instance that after the first game or two, players will get a handle on it. So when you have all those dice, you're going to choose any two of them and then add them together for your total. So that's the measure of how much effort you put out and you get it. Basically, that's your success roll. You can use plot points to add more dice, making your success better. And then you're going to choose one more die to be your effect die. You can't choose anything that you roll as a 1 to be an effect die, for example. And that's more or less it. So the dice pool system, in the instance of effect die, the higher, like a D8 is worth more than a D6. So you have to kind of look at what you rolled and what die sizes there are. A lot of that is setting things up for future. Like you might be trying to like hack the Hellfire Club's computers, and you want to have a really good effect die. There's a lot of things. There's like the plot points that are coming in that let you change the stories, change what's going on, set up additional things, add more dice to your pool. You also have the Doom pool, which is the pool of dice that the GM can add to things to work against you, which is also fun. Also, it has kind of a really unique way of handling experience that I always enjoyed. So, let's just keep using Black Widow, for example, as our example here. You don't have you have what's called your milestones. So, these are things that, while you're role-playing, may come up that would grant your character experience. You don't get experience for, I beat up 4 Hydra guys, how much XP do I get? It would be like, okay, Black Ops Betrayal is one of hers. So, when you first use your covert specialty in action and succeed, so let's say she does sneak past these Leviarian guards and disables the security systems I would gain one experience point for doing that. You know, if you get 3 XP when you convince a team member to make a painful choice or a difficult choice. You get 10 XP when you either betray a team member in a critical moment or sacrifice yourself for them. The other one is Deadly Romance, which 1 XP is when you choose to flirt with another hero. 3 XP when you make a decision or create circumstance that puts your chosen hero directly in harm's way. And 10 XP when you either abandon your chosen hero at a critical moment or sacrifice something you hold dear in to preserve your chosen relationship. So, every character here has stuff like that. It's not just this one example. Like, Captain America has, like, Mentor the Hero and Avengers Assemble. His would be, when you choose to aid a specific hero for the first time, would be Mentor the Hero. So, Captain America, for the first time, teams up with Daredevil. He would gain 1 XP. Avengers Assemble is the same thing. Experience points are really going to be used to step up your die and just improve your overall character. You have stress, which basically tracks your various amounts of stress and trauma, which you don't have a set number of health points. You have, like, die that you can absorb to take damage. You have physical, mental, and emotional. Cyclops is in here. I don't know if I mentioned Cyclops is in here, but anyway. Sorry, I didn't mean to, like, delve too deep into that. There's a lot of really unique stuff there. If you're looking at this game, the thing I love is it has a ton of kind of, it has a nice selection of heroes. It comes with an adventure, which is basically a walkthrough of the breakout event from Marvel Comics that came out years ago. That was kind of like the launching point for the new Avengers. It has a decent array of some nice bad guys to use in your game. Stuff like Sauron, Armadillo, Crossbones, Hydro Man. Let's see who else we have here. I'm just flipping through the book real quick. Mr. Hyde, Purple Man, who we all saw in Jessica Jones, Tombstone, Silver Samurai. So it has a decent number of bad guys. Now, the other thing that was cool about the Marvel role-playing game, Marvel Heroic RPG, was there were source books that were coming out for it for a while. So you had, like, big events that would come out that would have more bad guys and different versions of heroes to represent them during those events. And you could do that. The one I got was the Civil War one, which I used stuff from that when we played the game a while back. I will say that now, as far as like, okay, so you've said the things you like. The way they frame scenes is there's not really initiative in this game either, so it's kind of different than a traditional role-playing game. Basically, everyone just says, like, I'm going to do this now, and then the action passes off to the next player. It's meant to feel like a comic book playing out. It's not meant to be, like, static. I rolled a 10, so you go. You rolled a 12, so, you know, so on and so forth. The other nice thing is that in between scenes, you can swap heroes. So if you feel like I've played Moon Knight enough for the day, I don't want to play Moon Knight anymore, I want to trade off to Nova, or I want to trade off to Misty Knight or any other hero, you can easily do that. And that's a good mechanic to me. I do enjoy that part of it because there is kind of that tendency to be like, I've been playing this character a lot, and I don't feel like there's a good point to just kind of like jump ship and go with someone else, especially on a big team like the X-Men or the Avengers. So it is a natural swap-off point. Some people found that the way that the scenes were framed and the way that initiative works didn't favor their style of play or was confusing. Some people did say that there wasn't an actual character creation guide in the core book, which is kind of true. I never had that problem because, like, looking at it, I've made characters for this game. It's not terribly difficult. You just kind of look at the character and figure out what works. That was all, you know, they did address that, and in web-based stuff, they did, like, a character generator that you could use online. This had a huge web-based community, because people made literally, like, every hero you could conceivably want. People did heroes from other universes. It was kind of crazy because, like, you could go online and type in, like, almost any superhero or any iteration of a superhero and find them. Unfortunately, the system isn't available anymore. A few years back, they yanked it. As to why, what I've generally been told and heard is that it was popular, people liked it, the reception was good, but because it's a licensed property, they didn't get the return they needed on it, and they just had to pull the license. And it stinks when that happens, when business gets in the way of a great game, but at the same time, that's the luck of licensed properties. We love the games, but you have to have a huge return on them. As a result, this book is one of those ones that's getting harder and harder to find, if you can find it. And if you want to try something that is pretty different from your normal D20-based system, I strongly encourage this game. I really enjoy it. A lot of the online community is still up and running, even though the game itself is not. You can still find data files online. You can still play the game. If you can get the core book, then that, you know, you can play this game for years with just the core book, and it's a solid investment. I think that it's one of the best games out there. It does a nice job of just framing how the powers work and what... Okay, I'm going to use an example here. This is a decent one. So, all the powers have levels, meaning, okay, what die size do I have for this thing? We're going to use shapeshifting. So if I say my character has a D6 shapeshifting, you can make minor changes to your facial structure or aspects of your appearance, but not enough to closely mimic anyone in particular. Not terribly useful, but okay. A D8. You can take on an external form of someone else, fooling most onlookers and passing as the person you're imitating. You may also be able to take on the external form of an animal or another living creature. So that point, I would say you're like the chameleon. At D10, you may fully shift into another living physical form or shape, even down to the cellular level, fooling scientific instruments, extraordinary senses, and so on. Non-living shapes will still register as being organic. So, at that level, that's like Mystique. A lot of the Skrulls could do that. That's probably the most high-level shapeshifter we're going to see for the most part. And then at a D12, you may shapeshift into anything, living and non-living forms, fooling even cosmic senses. For all intents and purposes, you become that other thing. That's basic. It's not broken down that way for every power, but they give clear examples. So it's like, okay, what power level am I as far as this goes? Again, the biggest weakness to this game is it's so radically different than other games that if it's your first game, it's not helping you to learn other games so much. So it is very, very different. There are some things that are a little bit odd with it, and it's hard to find. And there's no more support coming out for this game. So you're basically picking something that you're going to go with the web-based community and try to follow up on that. If that's something you're prepared to do, great. If you don't feel like that's the right game for you, unfortunately, go with something else. Sorry we spent so much time on that. I will say again, great selection of starting heroes. They didn't put, you know, this book's all the Avengers. If you want the, if you want Captain America, then you have to buy this other book. And if you want the X-Men, you have to buy this other book. They gave you a nice selection of the heroes you would expect and gave everyone a good place to jump in. I do want to talk about another kind of... So, those are really the only established world games that I wanted to talk about. Most of the other ones we're going to be talking about are a little more freeform. So, bear with me here. So, with those games, we talked about... Okay, I'm playing Daredevil, or I'm playing Batman, or I'm playing the... Okay, so let's go into I'm playing my own original character. There are some systems that really do excel at original content and new stuff, one of them being Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds is a role-playing game system. It's actually a really, really good one. It comes out from Pinnacle Entertainment. It's widely available, still really well-supported, pretty standard as far as role-playing games go. You know, you're using a D20, etc., etc. You can get, I got, like, for example, I got the Savage Worlds Deluxe Edition at, Gen Con last year. It was $10. And it gives you everything you, the nice thing with this system is it does give you a bunch of different worlds to play with. Now, if you want to do superheroes, you need the Superheroes Companion, which there's a bunch of companion guides, but this is basically specifically for making superheroes. And just kind of like adapting the system to serve your superhero rules. It gives you a whole bunch of new options to really make it feel like a superhero game. I will say that I've only played this a little bit, so I don't have a huge amount of experience with it. I've enjoyed what I've played it. It does seem to break down at high levels. When I say that, I mean anything above like a street level hero, the game starts to break. We did a whole podcast episode about what is a street level hero. Those are characters like Spider-Man is about as high as you want to go in terms of power. If you get into stuff like the Silver Surfer and the Hulk and the Thing, characters who, you know, Superman kind of characters, those are what I'm talking about when I'm saying like you have like street level and then there's like almost like cosmic level. It just becomes like it's you almost can't stop them from doing what they want to do. There's very little challenge to it at that point, and you can just steamroll everything that someone throws at you. Which is great when it's like, you know, Nova invades the weak spaceship full of pirates, but when you have to throw an army at him to give him any kind of a challenge, it's not really fun. If you do have that in mind, however, you can have a lot of fun playing like street level heroes. There's nothing wrong with that. The game this system does come with a decent selection of pre-made bad guys and, you know, starter characters just to give you something to get running with. Savage Worlds is a really great jumping off point for new people who are new to role-playing games as well, because there are quite a few worlds to it. It does have kind of the standard feel, so there's just everything like Weird Wars, which is like werewolves in World War II. The world of Solomon Kane, Rippers, which is kind of like Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman a little bit. Space 1889, the Red Sands, Weird West. Huge number of systems. Everybody seems to love Savage Worlds. I don't dislike it. I just don't play it that much. I'm usually playing other games, but I do think that if you're new to gaming and you're just looking for something to jump into superhero games and you don't want to like lose all your money, you can get both of these books for less than $30 and get a huge amount of content out of it. Well worth the investment. You'll have a good time with it. I do think that there are better systems if you want to have more options for like power scale of your game, but we will talk about that later. So that's about all I have to say about Savage Worlds. So I'm going to break what I just said, and we're going to talk about, we're going to go back for a moment and talk a little bit about established worlds. For those of you who don't know, I really love the game Fate, when I say, you know, which is produced by Evil Hat. Fate has a huge number of games coming out, huge number of settings. They don't have too many things that fall into the superhero category, but there are two that I will bring up. One is Atomic Robo, which we did a whole review on a while back on the podcast. If you want to hear more about the Atomic Robo role-playing game, go listen to that. I'm not going to delve into it here. But it is a great kind of weird high science role-playing superhero game where you can play anything from a gorilla with a robotic arm to a dinosaur from World War II who, you know, flew a biplane into the future and now they're going to try to, you know, revive dinosaurs. Any of that stuff. Atomic Robo is just kind of like 1920s, you know, suck old Adolf on the jaw, ha-ha! But in the modern world with, like, super science and, you know. If you ever watched, like, Rusty and Rusty Boy Robot, any kind of, like, tries to catch that feel of the World War I, World War II era-esque characters, that's Atomic Robo. Now, there's another one called Venture City, which is kind of like a modern take on superheroes. I think it all establishes them in Venture City. I haven't played it, barely looked at it. I have, you know, but I know it's out there. I just wanted to mention that in case you're someone who, like me, really likes Fate and you're looking to jump into a superhero game. You know, you bought Fate Core and you're like, oh, well, what can I do with it? You might want to look at Venture City. Okay. So those are the two established setting games. And that's all I really want to say about them because we spent a lot of time on established settings already. Fate Core and Fate Accelerated are really great options if you want to do original characters in a superhero game. Could you do them for any established setting? Yes, absolutely. Fate, that's the joy of Fate. You can pretty much do anything you want to do. Conceivably, if you can come up with it, you can run it with Fate. And again, I don't even know how many podcasts about Fate at this point, but there's an entire podcast called It's Fate, where I just talk about Fate and what and how the system works. If you want to have... Fate's a great system just because of the flexibility of it. It's not one game. It's pretty much any game you can think of. And there's always new stuff coming out. It is very well supported. Evil Hat's a great company. They're always growing. They're consistently producing stuff. And it's an awesome way to jump into gaming, especially if you're new to gaming. I know some people don't like Fate because it is really story-focused. It's less about a mechanical focus. It's less about, you know, getting experience points and leveling up and that sort of thing. So if you do like that sense of progression, or if you like games that are more action-based than story-based, Fate doesn't always work. It is, again, it's very, very different than a lot of role-playing games. If you are, however, new to gaming, Fate is a solid choice. I can't say enough nice things about it. I really do enjoy that system. So that's all I'm going to say about Fate. Don't worry, I'm not going to spend 45 minutes talking about Fate. If you want to hear more about Fate, though, we did do a full podcast about it. Again, it's called It's Fate, and we did it a while back, so go look at that. So let's jump into some newer stuff. There's a game that came out recently from Magpie Games. It's called Masks. I have played it mostly online. I haven't played a huge amount, but I've played an ongoing game for a few months now. It's basically a teen superhero role-playing game. Now, I know that you may be picturing like millennials in your head and freaking out. I promise it's not that. If you're looking for anything like the Young Justice or Teen Titans, or, you know, if you like Voltron that's on Netflix, or the Power Rangers, or literally like any kind of teenage superhero teenage superhero teams, this is that. This is your go-to. It uses things that are inspired by those characters as examples. The strength of this game is that it is unique to, we are doing a teen superhero game. Go. There's no one else doing it. I mean, there's no one else with like focused on specifically that thing. It's also a strength because it does it extraordinarily well. It's powered by the Apocalypse World engine, which is the system that runs a lot of other games, like City of Mist, which I'll be talking about in a minute, Dungeon World, which is a friggin' fantastic game. You should really check that out if you haven't and you're looking for a fantasy game. The thing I like about this game is I think that it's going to appeal to people who are younger and really want to jump into a game, and it's very based on your interactions with characters and the world around you. It does set you up in a kind of stereotypical superhero city, but you do a lot of world building and things. I will say that having played Dungeon World and having played Masks, this game is very different than Dungeon World. It does encourage you to plan a lot more. Dungeon World was very much like, don't make any plans, don't build stuff, let things progress naturally, and don't try to have a plan, it's not going to work. Masks kind of encourages you to, like, have some plans. The game I'm running, for example, they just finished defeating their first bad guy, who was this Earth-controlling supervillain. He was just basically, I call him Landmark, his whole idea was he just basically goes to national landmarks and wrecks them to try and get news coverage because he wants to be famous. He wants to be the world's most famous supervillain. He's a jerk. Don't do that. But they defeated him. In the game, you're picking from various kinds of heroes. You have everything from the Bull, which is the classic, you know, go in and wreck face, to the Janus, who is kind of the duality hero, which you're, you know, you have a civilian identity and you're cleaning the dishes and going to school and watching your baby brother. And then by night, you're going out and stopping bank robberies. There's a bunch of them, but they're all very different and unique, and they have different abilities and powers. So you can pretty much find something that works with almost any idea that you have. You're playing original heroes. And yes, in theory, could you just be like, we want to do Young Justice or we want to do Teen Titans? I will say Masks would be my choice for any of those games. If you're just looking for something that kind of evokes that feeling of a teen RP, a teen superhero team, go get Masks. It's a fantastic book. I got the PDF version of it. It's, you know, it's out now. There are, I hope that they're going to do more stuff with it. I really do. I hope this isn't one of those things that's like a one and done book. I'd love to see more heroes come out for it. But yeah, very, very cool. Good starting point for new players. It is very focused though. That would probably be the only weakness I could come up with it for it is just, it's very focused on, here's what we're good at. What we want to do the Justice League. Are we doing like when Young Justice was filling in for the Justice League? No? Okay. Go play DC Avengers or something else. As far as, you know, the powers and things go, I do think that because you're working from pre-built, you get to choose and swap out some of your abilities and things, but you are still working from, here's a list of choices, pick from among them. So if you want complete customization options, this is not that. But still, awesome game, really enjoy it. Masks is very, very good at what it is good at. If you're going to specialize in a role-playing game and then specialize within even just one area of a genre of role-playing games, you have to be fantastic at it, and Masks is. So, speaking of specialization within a genre, a few years back, they did the Marvel Noir comic series where we had, you know, Spider-Man Noir who, you know, is still floating around every once in a while. I know he showed up in a few crossover events. We have like Wolverine Noir and the X-Men Noir and all those Noir characters. Noir is something that I'm not huge on. I've never been like the world's biggest Noir guy, but I enjoy it when it pops up. City of Mists is a superhero RPG that basically is, it's from a company called Sons of Oak, and it basically is take noir and take superheroes and just slam them together. It's all the weird myths and legends have creeped into our universe and basically cohabitated in these normal people and turn them into something more. It's kind of weird because like it is an established setting, but it isn't. It takes place in what's called the city. They never name it. It's meant to feel like it could be almost any city. And, you know, it's just that weird. The thing that I like about it is this. You can build out your characters, to, you know, make different kinds of myths. Right now, they just did their Kickstarter where they were getting the book created and they were going to build the city out more. So I haven't actually seen the full book yet. You can get the Kickstarter. There's a Kickstarter adventure. So there's a lot of good content available online to try this out. So again, fantastic for people who are like, we really want to just try something and jump right in. Great starting point for those kinds of players. If you like noir, if you like superhero stuff, also great starting point for players. We actually played, we're doing a two-part adventure with this system. We did the first one. We have to sit down and record the second one. I don't know why this time of year is just hard because of the holidays and everything. So it's like pulling teeth to get people together to actually do anything. I want to look at the system more when the full book is available. I'm definitely going to pick that up. But again, like the same with Masks where it's like, well, we're the teen superhero RPG. This is the noir superhero role-playing game. If you're doing anything and you like that kind of lore and stuff, do yourself a favor and pick this up. One of the cool things is like, you know, let's say you make a character that's inspired by Hercules, like you're a modern day Hercules kind of character. People aren't, normal people who see you doing all this weird, crazy stuff, shooting fire out of your hands, lifting cars. Because of their perception, they don't see you doing things that appear superhuman. They're basically, the mist protects you from being discovered. So you don't have to worry about that. You do have to worry about, you know, being murdered or killed by evil corporations or any of that stuff. Again, it's a noir role-playing game, which is unique. And it's really distinct in superhero games because I don't think there's another one that's like, again, we used to have like, here's all the superhero games in the books. And now it's like, here's one aspect of superhero games, but we took everything, we scaled down what we were doing, but we provided more content for that one aspect. It's not like, well, here's how to do like a Masked Men game or a World War II game. It seems like people are more and more trying to specialize, which I know some people are going to like, some people aren't. I think that's a good thing, because trying to do everything, you're either going to have to support everything and carry the game more, or it's going to be really hard to get people to keep coming back to it. So yeah, that's just my two cents on City of Mists. If you want to hear more about City of Mists, again, we did a whole podcast about it. Go listen. Part two of the adventure will hopefully be up soon. Like, maybe this month. I don't know. Don't judge me. Another one that is from a local studio, Four Color Studios, is 3D6 Supers. We did a whole podcast about this one. 3D6 Supers is a kind of a, I would put it somewhere in the realm of like Savage Worlds. It's meant to evoke kind of a street level superhero thing. Does a lot of things well, does some things less well. It does have the full customization that you would on, so if you're like, we want to be able to do everything. We want to be able to play in established settings. We want to be able to build characters quickly and start playing. This is actually a pretty good choice. I did a full review on this, so I don't want to spend too long going through it. But the things that I really like are, let's just talk about the things that are unique to it. There's no initiative roll because you're drawing cards from a deck of playing cards to determine your initiative. There's no leveling system. You don't level up. You are your character. They have other ways to improve over time, but there's no, I'm level 3 now instead of level 1, so I have this many more points. I do think it works extremely well as a, again, street level hero, kind of Justice League International kind of hero stuff, not Captain Atom. If you do really powerful characters, the game can kind of break a little bit. I think it works better than Savage Worlds. The cracks are there, but they're not like, you know, water is not yet pouring into the boat, even though we can see the structural weaknesses. But I would say if there's one big weakness to this game, here's what it is. And this is something that's been cited online. One, it's hard to get a hold of. As of right now, the only way you're going to get this game is if you live in Pittsburgh and you go to one of a couple of stores where the people who created it go in and put it on the shelf, and you're going to happen to get it. There's a copy sitting on the shelf at Drawbridge Games as we speak, unless someone bought it. And as of right now, I don't think anyone did. I bought mine there, too. The only other way to get a copy is to go to Lulu and have them print one on demand. Nowadays, there's so many better options. I hope that they get it on drive-through RPG or something, because I don't want to do a print-on-demand through Lulu. Years and years ago, yes, that was an option. Now, I don't want to. Or at least put the PDF up on drive-through. Even if it's not a print-on-demand book, that'd be fine. Four Color does seem to do a lot of things, so I don't think there's going to be a lot of support to this game as time goes on. I think that they have a lot of passion for their projects, but I don't foresee there being like a wealth of material for this. So if you're looking for a really inexpensive but fantastic system that allows you to do a little bit of everything, again, it's really different than a lot of superhero games. It provides a nice array of bad guys for you to use, some heroes, some quick character gens. I do wish there was more artwork in the book too, but what are you going to do? 3d6 supers is a solid choice. Again, it's hard to get a hold of, and for a system that's new, I don't know if you're going to want to put out the effort to grab a copy. All right, let's talk about one you guys might have heard of. This is called Bash from Cubicle 7. Cubicle 7 is, of course, the company that also produces the Doctor Who role-playing game. They're doing Adventures in Middle-Earth. They do a whole bunch of stuff. This is their superhero role-playing game. I have played it a few times, not too much. Bash is solid as a kind of a quick start game. It does do a lot of things that I expect in a more crunchy superhero game. You have your power scales, which it's like, okay, mystery men level, low-powered heroes common to the pulp era, street-level heroes, which is mid-powered heroes who are good to protect a city or a neighborhood, world-class heroes among the most powerful in the world. These heroes often save the Earth, and cosmic, which is godlike heroes who battle over the fate of entire galaxies. And that's actually, I think street-level heroes can help save the world, but yeah, that's my stance on the power scale. Does a lot of things really, 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 really well. It does have a lot of customization options. It's pretty quick and easy to understand. I do think that it gives you a good overview of how to build your world, how to build your game, what setting you're in. You know, it's like, okay, what kind of game are we doing? Like, oh, well, you're doing pulp heroes. Here's some tropes of the pulp age or the golden age of comics, the Cold War. It gives you a good history of comics and a good breakdown of how to build a game that has the feeling of those settings. It gives you a nice collection of ready-made heroes and ready-made bad guys so you can jump in if you don't want to build anything out. I think the only problem I have with Bash at this point, to be honest with you, is I don't think there's anything else coming down the road for it. I think I've only ever seen the book in one store, and I bought that copy. And I think the only reason that copy was sitting there is because it had some minor damage to it. Having said that, I still bought it. But, you know, it's a solid starting point. I feel like it's a good introduction to a more crunchy superhero game with more, you know, okay, I really want to start building my heroes. I don't think it's something that you're going to look at and spend 6 hours building a hero and just have a migraine at the end of it. So Bash is a solid choice. I hear Bash up there a lot. There's like 4 or 5 superhero games I hear about pretty regularly that people are like, well, this is my favorite. Bash is usually, if it's not on that list, it comes up in further conversation as we're talking about other games. Now, anyone who's been listening to this podcast and has been playing superhero role-playing games for years or role-playing games for years, you've noticed one omission from this so far. That would be Mutants and Masterminds from Green Ronin. As far as I'm concerned, Mutants and Masterminds is the best superhero role-playing game there is. Now, let me quantify that. Here's what I love about it. You can do pretty much anything you want to do with Mutants and Masterminds. It has a clear mechanic for building your heroes. It clearly defines what powers are. It gives you advice on building out the world. It is a super, super well-supported system. There is content coming out for it continually from Green Ronin. There's a very active web community around it. The people who have been working on this game and creating stuff to go with it for years know what they're doing, and they're excellent at it. I do recommend 3rd edition. I think that the 2nd edition was good. 3rd edition really did define things and just clean stuff up a lot. Now, I will say, we used to do something for the blog where we'd make mine a hero. I'd make a superhero or a supervillain every, you know, once a week using Mutants and Masterminds. I stopped doing it because there just didn't seem to be any interest in it. But it has a great collection of like kind of like archetype heroes to, if you're just like, we're going to jump in and we're going to play the game and let's start. I want to be, this kind. And you pick little things like, okay, let me grab my book real quick here. Because, you know, I have to be that person. Okay. I want to be, it's not going to give me what I want. Some of them you get to make choices. Some of them it's just, it is what it is. Like the Construct, for example, is kind of like the catch-all. You can have elemental powers, which gives you elemental, you know, lightning. I'm an elemental construct. I'm a creature that's created of fire. I have fire powers. Or, you know, I'm a soldier construct with a built-in weapon, or an undead like Solomon Grundy, or a wraith, which gives you the ability to become insubstantial. They're all power level 10 characters. Now, I will say that, well, Mutants and Masterminds, we did a whole podcast about Mutants and Masterminds, so I don't want to delve into that too much, because I will spend hours talking about how much I like that game. Mutants and Masterminds has two weaknesses to my mind, and that is this. It does very clearly put forward the power levels. Power levels are basically how many points you have to build your character. And it also determines, like, you know, Superman is more powerful than Vixen. Yes, they have different skill sets. Yes, some do, you know, Vixen can do some things better than Superman and vice versa. But it basically puts characters like, okay, Booster Gold is this powerful, Superman's that powerful, and, you know, we either have to boost that character up to his level so they can play on the same field, or drag someone down so they can play on the same level. I hate that. I hate it. And every time I tell people, I'm like, don't worry about the power level so much, let's just play the game. People feel like, you know, either they're getting gypped, they're getting ripped off and not getting the points that's owed to them, or they feel like they're just completely outclassed. I don't feel that way when I play those kinds of games. I've done enough games that way that I don't mind it, but everyone's different. Power levels aren't a weakness per se, but it is just kind of like something that I look at and I'm like, I wish there was a way for me to make people do things differently. The other thing is this. It is, you can build any kind of hero you can think of with Mutants and Masterminds. Having said that, you are going to put in a little bit of time. You do need to read the book. You do need to understand mechanics. So if you're new to role-playing games and, like, you've never played one before, it is a D20-based system. So once you actually get into the process of playing the game, you'll get a lot of the routine stuff down very quickly. I would say pick something with straightforward powers if it's your first game, because you don't want to pick something that's, like, super esoteric. Like, I have this really weird power, and I'm not sure how it would even work. You need to understand your powers to play any superhero game, as a rule. It's like, I have probability powers. Okay, we need to talk about what that actually means before we start the game, before you start making the character. The system also uses, in addition to powers, you have advantages, which those are things like, is your character the head of a company? Are they wealthy? Do they, you know, have a particular fighting style that they're adept at? Are they, you know, an inventor or a scientist or a ritualist, or do they speak a lot of languages? You know, skills, which is pretty much everything you expect to see in a role-playing game, from close combat to the ability to, you know, disarm a nuclear bomb while being hung upside down over a shark tank. Love Mutants and Masterminds. There's a ton of great books out for it. I do strongly encourage, if you are looking at Mutants and Masterminds for GMs, get the Game Master Guide. Why? Well, it comes with a huge number of ready-made bad guys that you can use, layers, advice on, you know, building out stuff, and that's all handy. The other thing that I do notice a lot is there's a lot of measurements in Mutants and Masterminds, which can throw a lot of people. Some people, as soon as they see a table or a chart, they're just like, I'm done. Nope. Out. Don't let that scare you off of this game. It's really good, and I promise you, even if you are playing that first time and you don't know what you're doing, it's a good starting point, because it very much is like the essential superhero role-playing game. If you bring up superhero role-playing games, Mutants and Masterminds is probably in most people's like top three. And now what edition? I don't know. They might like an older edition or, you know, something, but, there are support books that come out regularly. Like, I think they do the Emerald City. There's more stuff coming out for it all the time. This is also the system that powers, DC Adventures. Great game all around. If you want to hear more detail about Mutants and Masterminds, again, we did a big podcast about it a while back, where I just went through the mechanics and explained what I like and dislike about it. I don't want to gush all over them again. But anyway, so there are three other ones I want to mention. I haven't played these, so I can't give you too much insight into them, but they are ones that come up a lot. These would be Icons, Champions, and the Cypher system apparently also does superhero role-playing game stuff. If nothing I mentioned sounds interesting to you, or you're just wanting the breadth, width, and depth of superhero games, those are three other options that are floating around out there. this is by no means a comprehensive list of every superhero role-playing game either. There are other ones that I haven't played, haven't heard of, or just didn't see fit to mention. The Marvel games that came out, like, in the 80s, there were a huge number of them. I don't mention those because, one, I haven't played them. I wasn't playing games in the 80s. I was late to the game, literally. And the other problem with those is so many of those games are old, out of print, and nigh impossible to get your hands on unless you're going to download a PDF. And I don't want to tell people, like, well, start your journey through gaming by downloading PDFs of stuff that, you know, is coming from this third-party website. And, I want people to be able to get their hands on stuff. And I think that's a good way to get into gaming. You don't want to get started and play something and be like, well, I can't play this, or I can't get my friends to play this game because we can't find the book. Hopefully that helps someone out there. If you are new to gaming, or you're just new to superhero role-playing games, or you're just looking for something different. I know that, like, you know, a lot of times with these games, it's very, like, I don't know what I can do, what's out there. I wanted to do something that felt like, here's just a quick overview, and I know I say quick overview, and the podcast is now an hour long, so I apologize for that. I would say if I can give you any piece of advice to kind of help you ease into the superhero game thing, pick a character that has a power set that you like and that you understand. If you want to play a character who is like a cyborg lifeguard who fights crime on the beach, go for it. Just understand your character's abilities and have a realistic... Don't start off with, like, I want to have every power. Generally, here's three things I suggest ignoring. Don't make a mimic. They're always a pain in the ass in every setting. They are a difficult thing to play. They're a difficult thing to build, and they're a difficult thing to have played if you're GMing. Just try to avoid mimics. When I say mimic, I mean like someone like Rogue or Amazo or any of those characters. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me and I have that wall, but they're just a pain in the butt. Just, you know, pick something that, like, you can get your head around. Like, I turn in Beast Boy. I turn into animals. Okay. Have a little table of your animals that you turn into, 5 or 6 animals that are ready to go. So when you're like, okay, I turn into a dolphin, here's how my stats change. I turn into a hawk. Don't be like, I turn into an animal and show up at the table and be like, oh, can I borrow the book? 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 Gets annoying. Gets annoying for everyone because while you're flipping through the book looking for it to find just the right animal that may or may not be in the book, if you want to make your own, that's even fine too. Just have it. But yeah, that's the best piece of advice I think I can give you. For GMs, if you're doing a superhero game in an established setting, know the setting. Have agreed upon it with the players. If you're, like, doing your own thing and making up your own world, I would say for everything you plan, have there be something that you leave open to the players. Don't feel like you have to build your entire world down to every single nut and bolt in every building. Give players room to make their world their own. You know, when it comes to scale, like, do you want to play, like, pulp era heroes like the Shadow and the Spirit? Or do you want to play characters like Nova and Silver Surfer and Beta Ray Bill, who are cruising around the galaxy saving entire solar systems? That's your choice. Now, they both have their strengths and weaknesses. They both have their challenges and their triumphs. But that's something you're only going to learn by running those kinds of games. Players, you ask your players as well, kind of what characters are they interested in playing. If everyone in your game wants to play characters like who are off saving entire continents and, you know, planets, and you're having them fight, you know, tanks in a World War II inspired game, they're not going to be interested. So, I mean, you know, player input is just as important in superhero games as it is anywhere else. I would say in fantasy games, it seems like there is more of a tendency to world build. In superhero games, I don't think you need it as much. I think you need to establish what kind of world this is. If it is your own, it's like we're playing in the real world and superheroes just become real. Okay, what was the X factor? Yep, let's go. If you're playing your own world and just kind of write yourself up a quick little chart of kind of like, okay, how do the authorities feel about superheroes? What was the X factor? When were superheroes present? And, you know, who are some of the most famous superheroes in this world and what are they like? those would be some common things that I always kind of ask myself if I'm building a superhero game. Superhero role-playing games to me are probably my second most favorite, if not tied for first, they're my second most favorite type of game. I love coming back to them. I play them really, really often, and I enjoy them immensely. I hope that this helps someone out there to maybe find one that they can enjoy. If you have any thoughts, or if you've heard me not talk about a game that you think I'm an idiot, and you're like, you really should have talked about this game, or we want to hear you talk more about that game, please send us an email. Until next time, everybody, this is John with Out of Character. As always, we appreciate you listening. Until next time, play lots of games, stay safe, and we will see you next time. Bye!